Afternoon Drive with Goodman and Mason, presented by Silter Har Mazda. A no-pressure buying experience in Broomfield at Silter Har Mazda. Find them at sthmazda.com. Live from the Sasquatch Casino and Wildcard Casino Sports Desk, here's Eric and Andrew.
Welcome back, Afternoon Drive. Goodman Mason, watch us, milehighsports.com. You can reach us, Granite Liquidators Twitter feed, at Mace Denver, at Eric Goodman. Go to graniteliquidators.com right now. Giving away one complimentary free week workout, one full week workout at the Row House in Greenwood Village. Highly recommend it. Listen, I love lifting weights, but getting over there to get a low impact, high full body workout is something special. You need to go check it out for yourself. Give us a call. First caller, 303-831-1340. You're going to get that from the Row House in Greenwood Village. Time now for the lead.
The lead is presented by Smoke and Dave's Barbecue and Brew, Colorado's best barbecue since 2007. Go get some tonight in Denver, Centennial, Longmont, Lyons, and Estes Park.
Well, the only reason why I didn't hop in my car after the break was you said that Shelby Harris has done something that Aaron Donald hasn't done over the last couple of years. You have got me interested.
Well, you know what? If you'd gotten in your car, I would have hoped you would still listen to the show.
I would have. I would have downloaded our app and yeah, I would have listened.
It's easy, even though, you know, even you take it with you wherever you go.
Exactly.
Yeah. Anyway, what has Shelby Harris done better than Aaron Donald? And I know it sounds crazy on the surface, and I'm not sitting here and saying that Aaron Donald is not a better player and doesn't have more value than Shelby Harris. But if you add up sacks and passes defensed at the line of scrimmage, Shelby Harris does that overall at a higher rate than Aaron Donald does, believe it or not. And the reason why this is relevant for the Broncos is something that Bill Kolar has often said to his players over the years. And you can even find a video of it on YouTube, on the Broncos YouTube channel, when he's coaching defensive linemen at the Senior Bowl. And Bill Kolar flat out states, we count sacks and passes defensed the same. And Shelby Harris gets either a sack or a pass defense the last 2 years, once every 27 pass rush snaps. That is the best ratio in the NFL.
And the reason why we're talking about this is you wrote a fantastic article on thednvr.com. Mm-hmm. Let's just talk about two really good players also on the Broncos defense. Mm-hmm. Bradley Chubb, who made the Pro Bowl,
yeah,
and Justin Simmons, who is set to make a huge contract. Who's more valuable on that defense? Is it Justin Simmons? Was it Bradley Chubb this year? Or was it Shelby Harris? Don't just play the stat game. I'm asking you, what do your eyes tell you?
My eyes tell me that this past year, Bradley Chubb was more valuable.
I would agree. Because, part, you know, I'll tell you why.
In part because he was more available. I mean, unfortunately, yeah, for Shelby Harris, this rate, by the way, it was awful. He was still led the league this past year once every 29.7 pass rush snaps. But that was off from the year before when it was once every 24.7 that he had a sack or a pass defense. Why? He missed some time because of COVID. And he admitted, even though he had some flashes after he came back from COVID, he admitted that he was still winded, still kind of working his way back into shape, even though when you saw him chase down Tyreek Hill in Kansas City right after he came back from COVID, it made you think, boy, oh boy, he's got everything back. But Shelby would later admit that he was still feeling the effects right on through the end of the season.
I don't know if this is going to be a good analogy or not, because I'm just kind of spitballing here. All right. Personally, I believe that a guy who pressures a quarterback into doing something he doesn't want to do, throw an incomplete pass, and I know somebody keeps stats on that, but clearly they're not as valuable as a sack because you don't see it. End a play.
But if they force incompletions, they do have value. And that's why the pass defense at the line of scrimmage, that's why there is value in it, because you, even though you didn't get to the quarterback, you forced an incompletion.
Correct. So A sack ends a play.
Yes.
A pass knotted down and knockdown ends a play.
A pressure doesn't necessarily
end the play, but it could only, but maybe it's only a 2 yard gain. Maybe it's an incomplete pass.
Yeah. A hit doesn't necessarily end the play, but they do affect the play.
Correct. And I don't think that is talked about enough because people, you know, there were seasons where Von Miller didn't have crazy sack totals, mm-hmm. but his pressures were so high, people tended to discount them because you don't see that in the box score. I'll ask you this. What would you consider to be a good goal scoring season in the NHL? How many goals a game?
I'd say if you're scoring, if you're scoring 0.25 goals a game, you're going to have a solid year of 20 goals.
You think that's a good goal scoring year?
It depends what position you play. If you're on the blue line, it's going to be a little bit different. If you're talking about somebody who's going to, are you talking about somebody that you want to lead the team in scoring?
Yeah, you have a good, really good goal scorer.
I want a goal every other night.
Wow. So 40 goals?
I'm ecstatic if I've got a guy who's got 40. I'm fine if I've got a guy who's got...
I would say...
I've got 30. If I've got a 30-goal score, I'm feeling
pretty good.
Yeah.
30-goal score is pretty good.
I would love... But, I mean, I'm always looking for the guy who's going to get me a goal every other game.
So, generally speaking, is it fair to say a guy has more hurries and pressures than he does sacks? What's the ratio on that?
A guy who has more hurries and pressures than sacks?
Yeah, like a Von Miller. How many times
most players have more total, have more hurries than sacks.
Is it 2-1?
It's easier to get a hurry. I'll give you an example. Joey Bosa last year had 31 hurries, mm-hmm. 22 quarterback hits, yep. and 8 sacks.
Okay. So do you want to combine? So wait, it was how many hurries?
He had 31 hurries, 27, or he had, I was looking at TJ Watt there for a second.
He's pretty good.
Joey Bosa had 31 hurries, 22 hits, and 8 sacks.
Do you put hits in that equation, or is hurries a bigger stat?
Well,
okay.
Hits have the potential to, at that point, a hit, you know you really affected the flight of the ball. So basically, sacks are better than hits, and hits are better than hurries.
Okay, let's just use hurries as our. And he had 8 sacks, right?
Which means that he had
it's 3-1.
Which means that he
roughly
had 61 total pressures.
Right.
Which means he had a pressure once every about once every 9.
Well, what's
pass rush?
What's
snaps.
The ratio pressures to sacks? 6-1.
In that
5-1.
In that case, it's about 7.5-1.
7.5.
Or not
to
my
one.
Bad. No, 4-1. 4-1.
4-1. Okay, so let's just say your metric is 30 goals, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm going to lower the metric in hockey. You have a guy who scores 30 goals. Would you rather have a 30-goal scorer or a guy who has screened the goalie 90 times that has led to 90 goals?
We'd rather have the guy, if it's led to 90 goals, but it doesn't always, but as you know, not all of those shots are going to go in.
No, no.
And that
no, 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 no. Yeah. What I'm saying is 90 of his screens led to goals. Or let's just say 30 goal scorer or a guy who has screened for 50 goals.
Well, the thing is, where you're off on the comparison is that not every hurry leads to an incompletion. If every hurry led to an incompletion, then that would be like the guy who had 90 times where he screened off the goalie and 90 times it went in. Realistically, if that guy is screening off the goalie 90 times, let's say it goes in 40 times.
My point is this. My point is this. Would you rather have a guy who scores 30 goals or screens for 50? Not even 2-1.
You'd rather have the guy who screens for 50.
Of course you would, but you never see that in the score sheet. You only see the 30 goals. So what?
Which is why you keep track of pressures and why, if we're actually.
What kind of pressures did Shelby have?
I don't have that in front because I'm only looking outside linebackers because we're talking about Bradley Chubb.
Okay. So what we are seeing are plays by Shelby that ended plays. But those are potential game-changing plays, right?
Some have not just potential. Some have been game-changing plays.
And generally speaking, I want playmakers on my team.
Shelby Harris has been a playmaker.
And that's where I'm going. Shelby Harris is a play like Shaquille Barrett when he played for the Broncos. He didn't have a ton of sacks.
But they counted. I mean, Shelby Harris.
But he was a play. He was always around the ball. Some always good happened when he was around the ball. So for Shelby Harris, he is a playmaker. I don't know if Justin Simmons is the same type of playmaker.
Well, it's a safety, and he did have 5 interceptions. So right. He made That's plays a lot for on a the ball. Yeah, this day and age,
it's a lot.
Broncos haven't had a guy like that since Champ Bailey. They haven't had a safety like that in 15 years.
Nobody threw a champ.
Right, but they haven't had that opportunity. They haven't had a safety like that in 15 years that could get that many picks.
Right.
So that is making plays. That is having an impact.
Okay, so
I want them all back.
Let's cut to the chase. Shelby Harris is going to cost you how much? Nine?
Probably about $9 million.
Okay, and then forget money aside. Which guy is more valuable? Is Justin Simmons more valuable at 14.5? Or Shelby more valuable at 9? Forget it. All money being equal, meaning you have to choose between one of the two.
Well, with as big as Shelby Harris's plays are, Justin Simmons still has 5 takeaways, and that's like that's the biggest thing of all.
That's great. You can explain to me all day. Accomplish. I'm just asking you a simple question: which guy do you want more at that?
Why do I have to choose? I want both.
I'm saying, let's say you have salary cap constraints. You could take one guy. Who do you want?
I'm taking Justin Simmons, but you know what? I can cut Jarrell Casey and pay for Shelby Harris.
I know you this can. This is you can cut. You can cut Von Miller
thing is,
too.
What we're having a debate on is I'm on a situation that doesn't exist. Where you have it's not the binary where you have to choose one or the other. You can have both if you want.
You know what? You bring in Matt Stafford. You can't have both. How do you like that ingredient to your pot of gumbo? You bring in Matt Stafford, now you can only have one. Which guy you want?
Well, I'd rather have both and go with Drew
Locke. I know you'd rather have both.
I'd rather have both and go with Drew
Locke.
You're
like the kid at the dinner table who says, I want both pieces of cake. You can only have one.
I'm not, but I'm probably not trading for Matthew Stafford if it's my organization because I think there's a ceiling to what Matthew Stafford can do, and I don't think it's going to be worth that money. Sorry.
You are not trading for Matt Stafford. So you can keep Justin Simmons? Are you crazy?
And Shelby Harris. And I'm playing the long game here. Matthew Stafford is going to be a big contract quarterback. I'm playing the long game and saying, Drew Lock is going to be here this year. We're going to have a better backup, someone who provides legitimate competition. And if it doesn't work out, I've also made a trade or two to build capital for 2022 in the draft, and I'm getting my long-term quarterback.
I have
then.
Nine words go. For you. I am glad you are not my general manager.
Why?
Because I'm taking the quarterback.
Good for you.
Period. Of course I am.
I mean, I'm taking Deshaun Watson over anything, but I don't think that's going to be an option.
Coming up after the break, we are going to talk more about the passing of iconic legend, because that's what he is. Is that, am I kind of saying the same thing, iconic legend? Like an awful tragedy?
Just all-time great.
All-time great. Hank Aaron, we're going to talk to Thomas Harding. He grew up watching Hank Aaron. Covers the Rockies for MLB.com. Thomas is next. But I can turn him inside out. I don't need no help.
Afternoon Drive with Goodman and Mason, presented by Silter Har Mazda. A no-pressure buying experience in Broomfield at Silter Har Mazda. Find them at sthmazda.com. Live from the Sasquatch Casino and Wildcard Casino Sports Desk, here's Eric and Andrew.
Welcome back, Afternoon Drive. Goodman, Mason, watch us, milehighsports.com. You can reach us on the Granite Liquidators Twitter feed, at Mace Denver, at Eric Goodman. I want to tell you about Granite Liquidators. You need to go there for a couple of reasons: their process and their pricing. For starters, they fly out to the quarry and actually pick out the pieces of granite. And why is that important? Because they fly out to find it, and then they actually bring it back. Other granite companies, they have somebody else go out there, and then it goes through a lot of different hands. The importer, the exporter, you know, whoever else, and the more hands it goes through, the higher the price is going to be. So you're going to get the lowest prices for sure at Granite Liquidators. The other thing is when you go to their store in Wheat Ridge, you're going to see the piece of granite that you want. You're going to literally put your name on that piece of granite, that's the piece of granite you are going to get. Maybe there's something inside that granite that you really like. There's a little nook and cranny there that you like. That's the piece you're going to get, right? When you go someplace else, you go into their showroom and you see a piece of granite. That's not necessarily the piece that you're going to get. You're going to get something just like it, but you're not going to get that piece. That's what makes Granite Liquidators different. Find them at graniteliquidators.com or go to graniteliquidators.com, as I said, or go to Wheat Ridge. Time now for The Buzz.
The Buzz is presented by the Row House in Greenwood Village. Tired of the same workout? Go to Row House in Greenwood Village. They make it fun, incorporating weights, stretching, music, and great instructors into six different classes. Sign up for your free class today at therowhouse.com/location/Greenwood-Village.
All right, let's go out to the hotline. I'm going to bring in our friend Thomas Harding. He covers the Rockies for MLB.com. How are you, Thomas? Were you okay with the walk-up song?
Actually, I sent him a note. It was the wrong song. There was a song called Move Over, Babe. It was right as Hank Aaron was going for the record, right. And it was written by a pitcher for the Tigers, Bill Slayback, and also Ernie Harwell, the voice of the Tigers.
Yeah, he did the lyrics, popular. Right? Ernie Harwell wrote the lyrics, right? And Bill Slayback did the music?
He did the music, and I think someone else actually recorded it, but I think Bill Slayback also recorded it. Move over, babe. Here comes Henry, and he's swinging mean. Move over, babe. Hank did another. He'll break your 714. Here we go.
Move over, babe. Here comes Henry, and he's swinging.
Listen, you've just become high maintenance, Thomas. Have we whetted your appetite?
I'm jacked. I'm excited now.
All right,
thank
good.
You.
Don't thank me. Thank Danny. Danny's the one who found
it. Danny, thank you.
You're welcome, Thomas. I'll get it right next time, the first time.
Okay.
That's beautiful.
And that song sounds like it is of its era. That's you hear the opening, and that just sounds like 1973, 1974 in a nutshell.
Yeah.
And it's funny because in the run-up, at the end of the 73 season, I think that's when the song was released.
Yep.
And every Saturday on the game of the week, they would play it and give an update on how close Henry Aaron was getting to the record of Babe Ruth.
All right, so you grew up watching Hank Aaron. For young black men who are older than you, Jackie Robinson was very, very important to those young black boys growing up. And I'm sure Jackie Robinson meant something to you, but you really didn't get a chance to watch him play. Watching Hank Aaron play, what did he mean to you, not only as a baseball player, but as someone who was an activist as well?
Well, I'll tell you what, at that time, and when he broke the record, I had just turned 11.
Right. Mm-hmm. But you remember it.
Right. At that time, I'm going to tell you, first of all, it wasn't unusual to see great black baseball players if you look at the league at the time. I mean, I just remember Hank Aaron just being there. I mean, and it's a great thing because we could identify with players like that, but it's almost like no one had to tell us because we saw it. We saw him play. I remember, you know, my mom and my dad sitting there watching baseball with me, and going down to my grandma's house, and they turned on the television set. I mean, baseball was so big in our communities, and yes, when he was going for the record, I was able to read what was going on at the time, which I thought was just totally ridiculous that, of course, we sit here with a lot of stuff today. I wonder if Twitter had existed, how many people who now are given platitudes would have been putting up very mean things about Hank Aaron at the time. But I thought that was stupid. I thought there were a lot of stupid, mean, and racist people in America. But the fact of the matter was, when you thought about baseball, he was one of the guys that you said, man, I could never be this guy. I just have to watch him.
We talked about this in the previous hour, but I want to ask you, the fact that he not only broke the record, but did so in Atlanta, playing for the Braves in the Deep South, the first team that moved to Atlanta in 66, and that he was their signature player, what sort of weight did that add to everything that he accomplished?
It added quite a bit because when he moved there, I mean, even, and I've talked to players around that time, and I grew up in West Virginia, not quite the Deep South. In fact, where I grew up, and especially the black kids around there, we did not identify with the South. But mm-hmm. my first grade year was the first year of integration in the school system where I grew up. You knew what was going on south of us. You understood what was going on south of us. So to watch the Atlanta Braves with Hank Aaron do what he did, his brother Tommy came up with the Braves. And, you know, they had moved there from Milwaukee. It wasn't like he was originally in the Braves, in the Atlanta Braves organization.
Right.
They moved there from Milwaukee. So when baseball landed in Atlanta, whether they liked it or not, Hank Aaron was a star of that team. I mean, and that team had a number of stars. I mean, I believe it was Rico Carty, and it may have been the year before Aaron broke the record. I'll have to look it up, but he was a write-in candidate for the – he was a write-in because they had these punch ballots. He was a write-in and got to start in an all-star game. I mean, mm-hmm. there were so many good black players. Ralph Garr was coming up. Dusty yeah. Baker, you saw him as a young superstar of the game. So what I liked about it was these were men who could not be held back because they were that good.
We were talking with Thomas Hardy. He covers the Rockies for MLB.com. I asked this question, and I'll include myself in this. I was born in 1968, but to this day, I take a lot of pride in knowing, because I am Jewish, that Sandy Koufax did not pitch in a playoff game because it was Yom Kippur.
Right.
To me, that is still important to this day because I am Jewish. As a young black man growing up in West Virginia, what was it like for you to see, knowing there was, you know, we were in the middle of, you know, lots of civil unrest in the 1960s, and I know this happened in the 1970s when he wound up breaking the record. But what did it mean to you that a black man broke arguably the most cherished record in professional sports at the time that was previously held by a white man?
Well, that was the time that it was a very beautiful period. Not only did you have him breaking that record, but how about Muhammad Ali
yeah.
coming back from what he went through?
Right.
There was a lot of pride that, hey, maybe they don't want us doing this, but guess what? We cannot be stopped. That's what it meant.
Good for
That's
you.
What it meant. In fact, here's something just really funny. I was also part of the generation, and it was really later than me that it really kind of set in. But baseball was starting to drift from the black community. Baseball was becoming more of a money sport, but it was starting to drift from the black community. It seemed like basketball wanted us more. It seemed like football wanted us more. But baseball was the sport. I mean, when I remember my first baseball team was not very good. And I came home from a game one day, and my mom looked at me almost laughing, and she said, "How can you guys have a bad baseball team with all those black children on it?" It's like the people that were older than us, that baseball was the sport of pride.
Right.
And I would love for it to get back there to where it's the sport of pride. It's a great sport. We just have to get some of the things that have pushed us out, and we have to get those out of the game.
By the way, I don't know if you know this, but there is one player in the Hall of Fame that you and I can share together. We share
Rod Carew.
There you go. We share him. We will cut him in half. I get half. You get half. How do you like that? Has that ever been said in the history of sports where someone of the Jewish faith and someone who is black can actually share greatness like this?
I tell you what, and it's funny because when this came up, all those things that Hank Aaron went through. And by the way, I just put up a story on MLB.com and Rockies.com talking to Paul Egan's, who is the director, senior director of Major League Operations. He was brought into baseball by Hank Aaron himself, and he told some great stories about it. Hmm. But, yeah, I just, you know, what you're doing is you're bringing back memories of I batted right-handed and tried to be Rod Carew. And this is something that kind of goes back to what I tweeted this morning. I watched Hank Aaron play. And the way he would take that big bat, and, you know, hitters back then, they carried war clubs. They weren't these little toothpicks. He made it look like a toothpick, how quickly it went through the zone, how level it went through the zone. I could not imitate him, so I tried imitating people like Rod Carew and people like that because Hank Aaron was just too big. You know, he was too big.
The other thing about Henry Aaron in terms of on-field, I mean, is the longevity. And this is somebody who hit 40 home runs, batted over 300 at age 39. And yet nowadays we see modern hitters, modern sluggers that really tail off as they get in those years. Are we ever going to see somebody who has the sort of career arc of Henry Aaron where they get to year to their age 37, 38, 39 seasons and they're almost as effective as they were when they were 23 or 24?
That would be tough. And I was talking to someone today and they mentioned Albert Pujols as being somewhat
similar. It was me.
Yeah, that's right. It was you. Yeah. You know, as being someone said, but here is why Hank Aaron did what he did and why it's hard to do what Hank Aaron did. Hank Aaron had what I call a line drive swing. He did not hit the long tape measure home runs. He did not hit the ball in the air. A lot of hitting instruction right now, and I think it's very wrong-headed, a lot of hitting instruction is asking hitters to manufacture the ball into the air. So a lot of people are taking a swing that isn't even comfortable for them. Hank Aaron figured out how to swing a bat. I mean, my gosh, when he was young and a teenager, he batted cross-handed and still hit. He learned how to bat correctly, and he figured out how to come up with a swing that worked for him. I would love to see Hank Aaron in today's game for this reason. A lot of pitchers are pitching above the zone, high in the zone. He destroyed those pitches. A lot of those pitches got out of the park in 1.5 seconds, it seemed. They were just tomahawk line drives over the wall. I would love to see him today. If Hank Aaron were playing today, I believe that Hank Aaron would be an absolute superstar just like he was back then. The other thing about him, and Reggie Jackson was saying this on MLB Network not long ago, he struck out three times in the game once early in his career, and he went home and told his wife, "I struck out three times in the game. I will never do that again." And I'm not sure he ever did it again. Yeah. I mean, that's what you saw. You saw power, you saw average, and he didn't trade strikeouts for power, where today they just accept these strikeouts. And that makes the game a lot more boring. I mean, Hank Aaron played an exciting brand of baseball when he was in the batter's box, also in the field.
We have less than a minute left, Thomas, and this is going to probably sound crazy, but I think that Hank Aaron might be the most underappreciated superstar for this reason. He wasn't boastful, he didn't talk a lot, and there was nothing flashy. And you're the perfect guy to talk to about this because you probably played baseball growing up. And I'll ask you, when you were standing at the plate, did you want to be Hank Aaron or Willie Mays? And what do you think most kids wanted to be? Willie Mays, flashy, one of the best players ever, or Hank Aaron, the home run champ who never said anything?
Well, I don't think, I do think it was Willie Mays, but I'm going to put it with the later generations that when I drifted away from baseball, I could not miss a Reggie Jackson at bat. But I think it was not necessarily what they said. If you go back and what some of the stuff we talked about, Kurtz Flood was outspoken. He was driven out of the game. Dick Allen was outspoken. He still isn't in the Hall of Fame, and nobody could figure out why. There were very quiet men that stayed in the game. Willie Mays did not say a whole lot.
Right.
He dealt with some things when they moved to San Francisco.
But he was flashy. He had flair about him. I'll tell you something funny. You know, I had a long conversation today with, because you brought up Dick Allen. So Bill Melton, do you remember him?
Right.
I've known Bill for a long time. When I did the pre and post game shows for the White Sox, Bill was the analyst and I was the host on TV. I was talking to Bill for a while today about Hank Aaron, and he said to me, "The best player I've ever played with was Dick Allen, and was never appreciated enough."
Never appreciated enough. And the thing is, he did not put up with the stuff that he was to put up with. Hank Aaron didn't put up with the stuff either. He became active, especially after moving to Atlanta and seeing and saying, I have a responsibility here. But if you go back and you look at the time, frankly, you look at now, I mean, who is one of the most hated men in America right now? And that's Colin Kaepernick, because he spoke out. Okay. So, I don't necessarily put wanting to be Willie Mays necessarily on the style and the flashiness. I just think that, and I can say this for myself, that you saw what Hank Aaron did, the way he swung the bat, the fire that the ball came off the bat. And you could want to be Hank Aaron all you want, but there was one. You could go out and pretend to be Willie Mays at least.
Yeah, exactly. So,
and for me, a little bit later, like I say, I couldn't miss Reggie Jackson batting. For what, I was an infielder when I was little. They got moved to the outfield, then started playing football. So you know how good a baseball player I was, I guess. But the guy for me was Bobby Bonds, because I was like, wow,
right.
He hits some, he runs some. I want to be this guy. I want to throw like him. I didn't think I could ever measure up to a Hank Aaron.
Thomas, thank you so much for your time. Don't forget to read Thomas's article on Hank Aaron on MLB.com. Thanks, Thomas. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, Thomas.
Thank you for having me.
We're going to switch things up a bit, Dan. I'm going to throw a loop at you. Next segment, we're going to do Just In Case You Missed It. And then in the final segment, we're going to preview the AFC and NFC Championship game. That's next.
Afternoon Drive with Goodman and Mason, presented by Silter Har Mazda, a no-pressure buying experience in Broomfield at Silter Har Mazda. Find them at sthmazda.com. Live from the Sasquatch Casino and Wildcard Casino Sports Desk, here's Eric and Andrew.
Welcome back, Afternoon Drive. Goodman, Mason, watch us, milehighsports.com. Reach us, Granite Liquidators Twitter feed, at Mace Denver, at Eric Goodman. Go to graniteliquidators.com. Time now for What's Trending, which is, just in case you missed it,
What's Trending, presented by Silter Har Mazda, a no-pressure buying experience in Broomfield at Silter Har Mazda. Find them at sthmazda.com.
Just in case you missed it, unfortunately, we have a little bit more sad news this evening, as former Broncos O-lineman and two-time Super Bowl winner Tony Jones has passed away. He was named to the Broncos top 100 team back in 2019. Any thoughts on Tony Jones?
Well, I mean, he started at both right tackle and left tackle. In fact, started at right tackle in 97 when he came in as a free agent from Baltimore. He'd spent 9 seasons with that organization in Cleveland and then in Baltimore. And then Gary Zimmerman retired. And in 1998, he moves over to the left side and replaces Gary Zimmerman and plays at a Pro Bowl level. Only a Bronco for 4 years, but a starter on both Super Bowl 32 and 33 teams, made that time count. And someone who was beloved by guys on that team. One of those, I've heard him described over the years as the life of the party when the Broncos were in that day. That he was somebody who always had a smile, was always having fun. Really brought out the best personality-wise in a lot of his teammates.
And he was also considered to be the best dresser on the team,
which is saying something as a 6'5", 291-pound player who simply couldn't go off the rack to Nordstrom and buy the suit that he wanted. He had to put some serious effort into making sure that he had the right fit for him. Sadly, he is the first starter on those Super Bowl teams to pass away, died at the age of 54.
Other than Championship Sunday this weekend, there's another big event on tomorrow night between Conor McGregor and Dustin Poirier. It will be their second fight. They fought first back in 2014. This will be from Fight Island. McGregor looking to make it a 2-0 record against Poirier. So oftentimes a sequel is said to not be as good as the original. What are some of your favorite sequels, Andrew and Eric?
Empire Strikes Back.
Sort of the best example of the sequel being better than the original. And really the exception to the rule. Maybe like in sports, we think of some sequels, for example, in terms of matchup.
Well, Ollie Frazier 1 was better than Ollie Frazier 2.
Yes.
Because Ollie Frazier 1 was an absolute classic. I'm sure, I don't know where, did Borg face McEnroe for the first time in that epic Wimbledon final?
They played in other matches before.
Right, but I'm talking about Wimbledon.
But at Wimbledon, that was the first time they'd faced in the Wimbledon final. And then they faced each other the following year at Wimbledon in another five-set match that John McEnroe won.
Yeah.
But it isn't as remembered as well as the original Wimbledon final between the two in 1980, which is considered one of, if not the greatest tennis match ever played.
All right, coming up after the break, we are going to preview the NFC and AFC championship games. Who do we got with the spread? That's next. You're going to come to me. Here you are. But you better choose carefully. I don't know
anymore. Afternoon Drive with Goodman and Mason, presented by Silter Har Mazda, a no-pressure buying experience in Broomfield at Silter Har Mazda. Find them at sthmazda.com. Live from the Sasquatch Casino and Wildcard Casino Sports Desk, here's Eric and Andrew.
Welcome back, Afternoon Drive. Goodman, Mason, watch us, milehighsports.com. You can reach us, Granite Liquidators Twitter feed, at Mace Denver, at Eric Goodman, go to graniteliquidators.com. Time now for the final word.
The final word is presented by the McKenzie Law Firm. Don't wait before it's too late. Protect your family by setting up a will, living will, or estate plan with Dan McKenzie at themckenziefirm.com.
Two unbelievable championship games on Sunday. NFC Championship game kicks it off. Tom Brady and the Buccaneers against Aaron Rodgers and the Packers. The Packers are three-point dogs in this thing. The last time these two teams play, the Buccaneers boat race the Packers 28-10 in Tampa. This one at Lambeau. How do you see this game unfolding?
Not like the game in Tampa. I do have concerns about the Bucs secondary against a quarterback that can go deep. The thing that Drew Brees failed to do last week, because basically there was nothing left in that arm anymore, is that he couldn't push the ball vertically downfield.
Right.
And it was very telling that when they brought Jameis Winston in for one pass, and he went downfield, very telling that it resulted in a touchdown. So Aaron Rodgers still has everything when it comes to the deep ball. He can check it down. He can beat you that way now. It's part of why he's had such a great year, is basically being able to take what's there. But what's there, if the Packers can give him enough time on the offensive line without David Bakhtiari playing at tackle, if they can give him enough time to throw against the Bucs pass rush, then I think they'll hit some deep shots, and I think Green Bay will win a close one.
Yeah, I got to tell you, it's really hard to pick against Tom Brady. And I said that last week.
Yes.
When the Buccaneers played the Saints. And I lost one bet last weekend on all the ones that I made. And that was picking the Saints, because I felt that the Saints secondary was much better than the Bucs secondary. Mm-hmm. Well, as it turns out, because Drew Brees couldn't throw deep and he had to throw over the middle, he was caught with Devin White picking off passes.
Yep.
He was caught with Levante David chasing, you know, Brees all over the place. But I don't think that, I still don't think that the Buccaneers secondary really is that great. Do you?
It's not.
Right. And let's face it, Aaron Rodgers has one main weapon, and they're going to be all over Davante Adams. But Rodgers, it sounds silly for a 37-year-old quarterback, he has matured. He has learned from a young kid in Matt LaFleur, who is a second-year head coach, that it's okay to trust your running game. It's okay to check down. It's okay to throw the short pass. But you're right. He's talking about Rodgers. He still has it in his arsenal to throw it downfield. And I think Tampa Bay's front seven is terrific.
It is.
Now we will see just how good this Packers offensive line is, because you know what they did? They bulldozed Aaron Donald and the Rams front seven by just running it down their throat. And that was impressive. And if you can run the ball like that with Aaron Rodgers, mm-hmm. it's going to be pretty tough to stop. Because you know what? Tom Brady has been nothing special in either of his playoff wins. He has really relied a lot on his defense for these wins because his numbers have not been eye-popping. I believe he has completed in both games less than 55% of his passes.
Yeah.
It's just he has been smart with the ball. He's thrown four touchdowns and no interceptions. I mean, I have a rooting interest in the Packers because my father is a Packers fan. Giving the Bucs three, I'll give them three. I'll give them three.
Yeah, I think Green Bay wins this. It's a fun game. It's a competitive game. I think Green Bay ends up winning this somewhere around 30-24.
Yeah.
Or 35-28 or something like that.
Right.
A competitive game, a very fun game to watch. Both teams get their shots. One thing that was interesting last week is, of course, the Packers going when they did go deep. Alan Lazard had probably his best game to date. And if Lazard can make plays downfield,
because if Adams is going to be covered,
and if he does, if he capitalizes on what on the coverage, it's going to tilt toward Devontae Adams. And Lazard does what he did last week. Green Bay is going to come out of this with a dub. Don't forget, with Green Bay putting up 32 points on that Rams defense was as impressive a showing as we've seen all year.
Right. It's all going to come down to the Packers' offensive line. If they have a good game, the Packers win. If they don't, it wouldn't surprise me if, you know, Tampa Bay wins it.
And for all we're talking about the Bucs front seven, the Rams have a great front seven too.
They do.
And the Packers neutralized them last week.
All right, now the Bills and the Chiefs, two teams that I covered. I'm absolutely torn on who I want to win. I lived in Topeka, Kansas, not Kansas City, but I did live in Buffalo. I covered the Chiefs when they had Joe Montana, and then I covered the Bills as well. I love the Bills. I just can't pick against Patrick Mahomes. I just can't. I just can't.
Can't blame you.
He's the X factor. And listen, Josh Allen has been nothing short of tremendous. Whose defense is better, the Bills or the Chiefs?
The Bills actually have been playing very well on defense ever since the bye week. We talked about with your friend John Murphy from Buffalo, Bills play-by-play man. Since the bye, the Bills defense has found its form. Until the bye, first 10 games, they were struggling. Now they've basically played eight good games on the defensive side where they've allowed fewer than 20 points. This is actually the toughest defense that Patrick Mahomes has seen.
The way I look at this game from a betting perspective, if I bet on the Chiefs, it's a win-win. Mm-hmm. If they win, I love me some Patrick Mahomes, and I'm going to win money. If the Bills win, I'm going to be thrilled. I'm just not going to bet a lot.
Right. You know that Patrick Mahomes was taken off the injury report today.
Yeah.
So there was never any doubt.
You knew that was going to happen.
Yeah. There was never any doubt that he was going to play, but he's going to be ready.
Right.
And it's even though the Chiefs did lose a couple of years ago in the AFC Championship game at home to the Patriots with Tom Brady, it's still hard to see Buffalo with Josh Allen going in there and pulling it out. I think the Chiefs win, but it's another close game.
I mean, when you look at Josh Allen so far during the playoffs, he wasn't particularly great against the Ravens, although I believe that the Ravens had the best defense in football this year.
That game,
yes,
though,
better than the Rams.
That game, though, with the wind whipping up at around 30, 35 miles per hour, you almost kind of take that game as just as an aberration.
Right.
Because the conditions affected it, and conditions could come into play Sunday night in Kansas City. Not expecting that level of wind, but there is the forecast of a cold rain and thus a muddy track at Arrowhead on Sunday night.
Let's look at the win over Indy and the win over Baltimore for the Bills. Indy could have very easily won that game.
Mm-hmm.
Would you agree?
Should have won the game, only has itself to blame for losing the game.
With that, that's a game you could, if you want to say should have, a game the Colts should have won when Josh Allen completed 74% of his passes for 324 yards, two touchdowns, no interceptions. His quarterback rating was 122 in a game that Indy should have won. Then in Baltimore,
Indy lost because of bad game management.
Exactly. And then with Baltimore, the Bills scored one touchdown.
On offense, yes.
On offense, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
With Josh Allen, they scored one touchdown.
Again, in the wind, conditions not conducive to throwing the football for either side, so it was going to be a low-scoring game.
And Lamar Jackson goes out.
Right.
Listen, when you make a run to the title, usually there's going to be one game there that you should have lost. You can make the case the Bills could have been knocked out in either of their first two rounds.
Which is why I would look at them if they do win this game and start looking at them as a little bit of a team of destiny, kind of like the Broncos back.
Right.
The year they won Super Bowl 50, they got lucky in facing the Steelers without Antonio Brown.
Yeah.
They got lucky in week 16 when they were trying to push toward home field advantage in playing the Bengals without Andy Dalton, with AJ McCarron at quarterback. They just barely held on by the skin of their teeth against the Patriots. It was so close so many times to going the other way. Sometimes you just have years where everything falls in your favor. Buffalo in the postseason is having one of those years.
Yeah. So Brady goes to the Super Bowl. It's a feel-good story. You may hate Brady, but my goodness. Going to the Super Bowl with a new team at the age of 43, that's something.
A team with a long history of failure, too. That matters, too.
And the game, but the Super Bowl, is in Tampa.
They'd be the first team to play the Super Bowl in their home stadium.
Right. And then you have the Buffalo Bills. Great feel-good story. Josh Allen is on the rise. But at the end of the day, I think the Super Bowl will be a matchup of the two best quarterbacks in football, Patrick Mahomes and Aaron Rodgers, and it usually is that way unless the defenses come up big. Tampa came up big against the Saints, and the Bills defense, where people thought the Ravens were going to run all over them, came up big against Baltimore. That's going to do it for us. Jacob, Danny, Mace, great job all week.
Likewise. I'll talk to you next week from the Senior Bowl in Mobile, Alabama.
That's right. You're going to be joining us live all week. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. You'll be back on Friday.
Yep.
Make it the best possible weekend you can.